Thank you very much. I would like to start to say that I'm truly honored to be here with you today and to be able to speak a little bit about what Madeira has been doing towards climate change adaptation, its strategies and actions towards biodiversity protection. I will focus my presentation today on the adaptation. And so in 2015, Madeira approved its climate adaptation strategy. And the vision of that strategy is as stated here. So climate change adapted region with real engagement of its society and integration of its environment. So the vision of our strategy puts the environment on the central point of the strategy. The strategy is designed with 8 key sectors, and 2 of them are the most interesting for what we will speak today. So biodiversity is one of the key sectors, and the forests is also another one of the key sectors. And so I would like to present you a question. So why does biodiversity play such a relevant role in Madeira's adaptation strategy? I think you had the opportunity to visit the Laurel Forest yesterday, and you might have an idea of why is this so important for us. But this importance, and Madeira as a hotspot biodiversity, is known since the 18th century, the 19th century. Charles Darwin, in its Origin of Species, mentioned 23 times Madeira. So it's more or less the number of times that Galapagos is mentioned in this book. A publication of 2008 listed 7,452 species on terrestrial part of Madeira. Most of them are more or less unknown, like arthropods, lichens, and spermatophyta, the seeded plants. It's only 15% of this biodiversity. And the thing is that we have nearly 1,500 endemic species and subspecies. This means that they only exist here. So this makes it quite important. This biodiversity comes from marine birds, spiders, snails, reptiles. And I mentioned the ones on terrestrial, but we also have a very interesting biodiversity in the sea. The most prominent species is the monk seal. But this was biodiversity of species, but we also have habitats. I chose the Laurel Forest as the main theme, but I could also speak about the Mantegna's Massif, the altitude habitats, the habitats of Ponta de San Lorenzo, coastal habitats, Porto Santo and its islets. But just outside Funchal, you can see 3 little islands. It's the Desertas, or far away from here, near the Canary Islands, we have Selvagens. This is a photograph of Selvagem Pequena, an island that has no introduction whatsoever in its terrestrial part, so pristine habitats. Madeira has a history of conservation way before climate change was this very important theme. So in 1982, Madeira Island created the Madeira Natural Park, 2/3 of the island, to celebrate the coexistence of nature and people. It has areas of strict protection. On top of the slide, you can see Caldeirão Verde, a very beautiful spot, but also landscape protection, Curral das Freiras and Paulo do Mar, so places where people live. And most of it is protected by the Natura 2000 Networks Habitat and Bird Directive. But it's also, as it was mentioned before, Laurel Forest is a World Heritage Site since 1999. So we have a compromise with nature because we are taking care of habitats that are World Heritage Site. So it's for all humankind. Another example is the Selvagens Island Nature Reserve. It's the southernmost territory of Portugal, just nearby the Canary Islands. And they, Selvagens give us the Atlantic perspective for Madeira and also for Portugal and also for Europe. It was created in 1971, the reserve. It's a terrestrial and marine reserve, and it was the first Portuguese reserve. It was the key species for this reserve was the coris shearwater, but it's Selvagens Island is a marine bird sanctuary for a different species. And it received in 1992 the European Diploma for Protected Areas. But the enlargement of its marine area in 2019 up to the 12 nautical miles turned this reserve into the biggest no-take reserve in Europe. Here, closer to us, the Desertas Islands Nature Reserve, created in 1919, again a terrestrial and marine reserve. Its iconic species, the monk seal, the most endangered seal in Europe. Back then, we had 8 individuals of the species. Nowadays, it's around 30, more or less. But it's also important for other marine birds, fauna and flora. Very different endemic species occur just in Desertas Islands. Again, this reserve received the European Diploma in 2014. And the last example is right here in front of us, the Garajau Partial Nature Reserve, created in 1986, the first Portuguese exclusively marine reserve. Its iconic species, the dusky grouper. But it has other fauna, and it's protected by the Habitats Directive. It's just outside Funchal, so it's an urban reserve. And we have a lot of human activities occurring there. It's one of the most important, if not the most important, diving spot here in Madeira. So if you want to go there, it's very nearby. So all these types of reserves, the heritage site, the Natura 2000, the natural park, geological monuments, you see a map of Madeira here on the right side. 66% of the land has some level of protection, 89% of the territorial sea, so up to 12 miles, is also under protection. So you saw the dates. This is, most of it has 40 years or more. But now let's speak a little bit about future of conservation. So in 2019, we had here a project that showed that Madeira is not just nature above the water. We're speaking about deep sea biodiversity. So corals, gorgonias, kelp forests, lots of squid, fishes, sharks, and some species that are not well known for science. So Madeira is also a hotspot for deep sea biodiversity, and a lot of the environmental challenges that we have also to be dealt in the deep sea habitats. And so because of this, a few days ago, I think less than a month ago, we have the creation of this huge reserve in Portugal. You see there the red line, it's not really visible, but you see that drawing over there, it comes into the red line. The red line is the EEZ area of Madeira. And so this area has a total of 173,000 square kilometers, twice the Portuguese land area. It was a tribute to one of our oceanographer kings, Dom Carlos, and it's meant to protect seamounts and deep sea. But also, not just protection, we need to compatibilize these areas with other interests like fisheries and our artisanal fisheries. So taking into account the Madeira EEZ, it's 56,000 square kilometers, and 15% of all of our EEZ is already protected. So we are halfway for the 30 by 30 international objective. So I told you about the history of conservation. What about historical risks pressures that we have here? Forest fires is one of them. These images here show a little bit of what has been some recurrent events that we are having here. But I could also mention the alluvium or flash flood with our orography. Whenever we have huge precipitation in the mountain, we might have some of these events occurring. It has a huge effect on humans, but also on biodiversity and habitats, of course. The presence of exotic and invasive species, either from forest to coastal habitats, or more recently, the presence of an algae that is colonizing our ocean. This is something to be that we need to tackle. And with climate change, we are seeing more and more heat waves or tropical nights. This is a news in 2023 of 127 consecutive tropical nights in Funchal. So we are experiencing these things. And also, we need to be concerned about ocean heating. The speakers before me spoke about what this means regarding biodiversity. So back to the strategy. As I told you, it was approved in 2015, but it was based on 2005 climate scenarios. So the first thing we did was to study the impacts, the adaptation capacity, and the vulnerabilities towards the 8 key sectors. So let's speak a little bit about biodiversity. So this is not very clear, and it is in Portuguese, sorry, but what we did, this is divided in the groups and then in the habitats. And the left column is the vulnerability. So you see that a lot of the habitats or groups are very vulnerable. And on the right column, you see the capacity to adapt. So some habitats are very vulnerable and have little capacity to adapt. This is for terrestrial biodiversity. For marine biodiversity, the same exercise was conducted. And what we saw back then, 2015, was that there was it was less known, so we need to study more the marine environment in order to have clear measures for it. So after this, some measures were predicted to be taken towards biodiversity. Four cross-cutting adaptation teams arise from this exercise. So to increase resilience to extreme events, to prevent long-term trends, to increase research and innovation, and to increase training and communication. But then sectorial adaptation measures were also included in the strategy. So let's speak about biodiversity and forests, the theme that is most important for today's meeting. So in biodiversity, two main things were predicted: to increase knowledge and to guarantee a diversified landscape supporting effective ecological corridors. In the forests, I told you about invasive species and plague monitoring. Reforestation and protection of rural forests was also very important. And the last that I will say for later in my presentation, the firefighting of forest fires. So this was really, really important, and I'll show you why later on. So regarding the increase in knowledge, what have we been doing towards this? So most of it is done by European-funded project. This is a myriad of projects, and you see that we have projects to recover habitats, we have projects to protect species, we have projects to get to know better the deep sea, we have projects to nature restoration. So the European Union is dropping funds here, and we are using them to protect the habitats, to protect species, but also to increase knowledge on multiple issues. Then we also need to monitor species and habitats. And let me just tell you some very recent examples. So quite a few, a week ago, we presented our third forest inventory that showed what is happening with our forests, with laurel forest, with other habitats. It's very important for adaptation, for spatial planning. It's really important. It gives us a view of what's happening with the most important habitat we have, the laurel forest. But in 2025, we presented two important reports, one on the Habitats Directive and one on the good environmental status of the Marine Strategy Framework Directive. Another very important thing, since 2019, multiple revisions of IUCN conservation status for multiple groups have been developed here in Madeira. And there are also ongoing monitoring programs for endemic species that have been ongoing since 30, 40, 50 years. So a lot has been doing to monitor what's happening with species and habitats. Now I'll give you an example of the control of invasive species. This control generally is based on plants, and we have control for multiple habitats in desertas, in selvagens, in Ponta de São Lourenço, but also in the dunes of Porto Santo, with the engagement of society, students, and other important, I don't know how to say this in English. Well, with the army, with the navy, and so on. But also there is some control of vertebrates. You know, the mice, the rats, the rabbits, the feral cats, or the gulls. Some of them have a huge impact on specific species, so we also need to monitor and control this species. But now let's go to the most important point, the forest fires, and the need to fight forest fires here in Madeira. This is a graph that shows the annual number and the affected area by the forest fires, and you can see here I'm really sorry because I was expecting a larger screen, but let me go back. So this bar here, the green bars are the affected area, and the red line is the number of forest fires. You can see that the number of forest fires is getting lower. The tendency is to decrease, but then the area, we have some events like 2010, 2012, 16, and 2022 where we had a lot of affected area. And on the right side, it's the graph with the annual GHG emission by sector. So the yellow bar represents the land use. So whenever we have a forest fire, like in 2010, you see that the emissions go up, 2012, 2016, and the 2023 one, we still don't have the emissions, but yeah, there's not much doubt of what is going to happen. So fighting forest fires is the ultimate climate action, because otherwise we're undermining not only adaptation efforts, but also mitigation efforts. So this is the core and central action that we need to take here. And so what have we been doing about this? So planning is very important. There's a plan against to defend the forest against the fire. There are operational plans and also special dispositives to tackle forest fires. But prevention and surveillance is also important. So let me speak to you about the integrated monitoring alert and monitoring system that was developed by the local civil engineering laboratory. This is run by them. This plan here, this system, has two main branches, one for alluvium, I'm not going to go there today, but the second one is meant for forest fires, and it's based on remote detection and surveillance. This system is based on sensors and cameras that are widespread throughout the island to detect whenever a forest fire is started. And then, of course, this is complemented by human surveillance and most recently by drones. This could not be just about surveillance. We need to have the resources to fight the fires. So some resources were reinforced. The most important of it is that a few years ago, Madeira started to have a helicopter all year round, not just for fires. It has multiple objectives, of course. But the thing is that a second helicopter is to be set here throughout the year from this year on. So this is something that we are really focused on, but also the creation of a specific forestry saper corporation that has 30 elements is also very important to tackle the forest fires at its beginning and to prevent it to spread throughout the island. And also, of course, we needed to reinforce the traditional firefighting corporation with more means and with more adapted means to fight forest fires. Lastly, I would like to mention international cooperation and why I'm very honored to be here today, because international cooperation for us, it's key. 2 years ago, it was the European Union Civil Protection Mechanism that allowed us to have here two Canadairs, two airplanes to fight a forest fire that was ongoing for quite a few days and that affected the mountainous massive habitats, the altitude habitats. So we are proud to be integrated in this and really glad that international cooperation is ongoing. I told you that the strategy was approved in 2015 with climate scenarios of 2005. So we all know that this needs a revision. So we are ongoing a revision because the advances in climate science are so huge in the last 20 years that we need to cope with them. So we produce new regionalized climate scenarios based on another European project. And this report is available. It was made with a very specific scale, 1 square kilometer, with a reference period that is very recent, 1980 to 2010, and it has three projected time periods, so short term up to 2050, mid-term and long term by the end of the century. We based it on two SSPs. You know, the SSP2 is the middle of the road, so it's not even the Paris Agreement, but it's the most likely scenario nowadays. And the SSP5, business as usual, to see what is going to happen in Madeira. The variables that were modeled is temperature and rainfall, but also the sea level rise. And another one that's really important for mitigation, wind and solar radiation, because we need to know where to put our efforts in wind and solar, and if they are going to be the best spots in 20 years, 30 years, 50 years. This is really important for us. Three or four conclusions. Rainfall can be reduced by 65% by the end of the century if we go by business as usual. The average temperatures can increase 2 degrees by 2050, and remember, this is from 1980 to 2010. 2 degrees by 2050 and 3 to 5 degrees by the end of the century in Madeira and in Porto Santo, just 2 degrees, just in commas, of course. Extreme rainfall events can increase nearly 50% by 2050. I showed you what alluvium does here in Madeira. And drought periods can also increase. So this is very challenging. And this combined with sea level raises of 60 to 80 centimeters by the end of the century also gives us a view of the challenge to adapt coastal infrastructure. The one of the key aspects of revising an adaptation strategy is sharing the knowledge. So everything I've said here, all the reports by 2015, all the climate scenarios, and whatever is coming from the second evaluation phase, vulnerabilities, actions, measures, that is going on and that should be finished by the end of the year, is public. And here's a QR code that I'm glad to share with you guys if you want to get in the website. I can get back to this slide afterwards. So getting back to the question I posed you at first, why does biodiversity play such a relevant role in Madeira's adaptation strategy? I'm gonna leave you with a quote. I think you all know this, Sir David Attenborough. The truth is, natural world is changing. We are totally dependent on that world. It provides our food, our water, and air. It is the most precious thing we have, and we need to defend it. So this is why. Thank you for your attention.
Muito obrigado,
temos ali uma pergunta.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Na presença da Sra. Presidente da Assembleia Legislativa da Região Autónoma da Madeira, que muito nos honra e cumprimento com grande estima pessoal também, eu falarei em português. Agradecer a apresentação do Sr. Professor. De facto, apresenta-nos aqui um projeto muito ambicioso, o Dr. Pedro Sepulveda, para aquilo que é o plano para a descarbonização, digamos assim, para combater as alterações climáticas da região autónoma da Madeira. E temos aqui excelentes exemplos, não só daquilo que tem sido feito, como também aquilo que está previsto fazer e aquilo que são, de facto, as grandes ameaças que uma região com uma dimensão insular ameaça ou atravessa, especialmente tendo em conta que, no nosso caso, vindo dos Açores, somos muito mais, eu diria, vítimas das alterações climáticas do que contribuintes líquidos para estas mesmas alterações. E é por isso que às vezes são os que, eu diria, menos responsabilidade têm, que mais ambição mostram. E é o caso aqui presente, por isso dou-vos parabéns pelo excelente trabalho aqui apresentado. Mas há aqui duas questões que eu também gostaria de reforçar. A questão agora recentemente da divisão das áreas marinhas protegidas, chamada Dom Carlos, que está em consulta pública também, que é uma excelente iniciativa, que vai permitir então proteger o mar da Madeira e de Portugal continental em 173 mil quilómetros quadrados, o que mostra um grande compromisso com aquilo que é a sustentabilidade por parte destas regiões, no caso da Madeira. Nos Açores também recordo que nós já protegemos cerca de 300 mil quilómetros quadrados com grande, eu diria, pressão sobre o setor das pescas. E este equilíbrio, que também o Dr. Pedro referiu, da necessidade de contemplarmos, de alguma forma, a utilização, eu diria, multidimensional do mar, não só a questão das pescas, mas também há uma grande pressão ao nível, por exemplo, do continente para a produção de energia, também vindo do mar, também compete com os nossos pescadores. A questão também direcionada àquilo que são as compensações eventuais para perdas que são expectáveis pela diminuição da atividade económica. Tudo isto tem que ser ponderado e é, obviamente, uma carga sobre aquilo que são os recursos das próprias regiões já limitados à partida. E eu recordo também aqui a questão específica do atum rabib, que usa a rota de migração, passa pelos Açores, pela Madeira e que vai ao Mediterrâneo para desovar e que é uma das espécies mais figurativas que nós temos no nosso setor. Portanto, é também tão importante nós percebermos que nós temos aqui uma interdependência, apesar do Atlântico, temos uma interdependência do Mediterrâneo que tem que, obviamente, garantir que há um curso normal migratório desta importante espécie, desde logo para pescadores tão distantes como aqui da Madeira e dos Açores. Mas a minha questão é muito concreta, porque nos Açores nós temos quantificado o impacto do setor agrícola, de facto há uma grande pressão agrícola, nomeadamente da produção de leite e de carne nos Açores, mas tem a noção, tem a quantificação do impacto das atividades humanas que são essenciais para a autossubsistência da região autónoma da Madeira, mas ao mesmo tempo também podem contribuir para a produção para a emissão de emissões para as outras de CO2, portanto tem quantificado em termos de ação concreta qual é que é a atividade económica mais poluidora, digamos assim. E por outro lado também dar nota de que eu perguntar se tem em vista a possibilidade de criação, agora já muito badalada, a questão da criação dos mercados de carbono, uma vez que a definição da área marinha protegida também faz captura de carbono. Se isto está quantificado, a floresta laurencida está protegida, também faz captura de carbono. Se tudo isto está quantificado, nas contas do deve haver para compensar de vinda das regiões, como é o caso aqui da
muito obrigado.
Muito bem. Bom, muito obrigado pela pergunta. Eu foquei-me hoje um bocadinho na adaptação. A sua pergunta veio um bocadinho mais na lógica da mitigação. A região autónoma da Madeira tem, de facto, o seu inventário das emissões também publicado. Esse inventário demonstra que na região autónoma da Madeira, os dois setores com maior contribuição são os da produção de energia e obviamente que uma região ultraperiférica que não tem a possibilidade de uma interligação à rede europeia terá sempre um desafio acrescido nesta questão. Os Açores, pelo seu posicionamento, têm a geotermia, nós não temos essa possibilidade. E aqui acresce a questão da água, porque aqui na região a energia limpa é também produzida pela água, um bem escasso para as populações, para a agricultura e para os cadáveres ecológicos. E o outro setor é o setor dos transportes. Igualmente um setor que, pela nossa orografia, põe desafios bastante grandes e, pela dispersão no nosso território, torna mais difíceis algumas das soluções, tecnicamente mais difíceis algumas das soluções que são comuns no território continental europeu. Ainda assim, o terceiro setor é a produção dos resíduos e, portanto, ao contrário dos Açores, nós não temos uma atividade económica que se destaque desse ponto de vista. Eu não vos falei hoje dos imensos esforços que a região está a fazer do ponto de vista de mitigação, que também são bastante elevados. A maior parte dos investimentos na região nos últimos anos têm sido direcionados para a mitigação, para a produção de energia limpa e para a redução da pegada de carbono da região. Mas falou da Laura e Silva como um sumidor, e aquilo que nós temos visto é que a Laura e Silva, pelo seu caráter também milenar, digamos assim, é uma floresta que não é propriamente uma floresta, é uma floresta envelhecida e é uma floresta que não tem esse papel tão decisivo. E relativamente à questão dos incêndios que eu foquei, sempre que temos um incêndio, aquilo que deveria ser um sumidor passa a ser um contribuinte líquido com uma elevada proporção. E, portanto, o desafio da mitigação e da adaptação tem que ser levado a par e passo aqui na região. Deixe-me só falar um bocadinho da questão dos mercados de carbono. É verdade, estamos a começar, não é? Muitas medidas têm sido tentadas e implementadas. A Madeira tem agora um projeto ambicioso em terra, que é um projeto de carbon offset. Portanto, um projeto que permite que as empresas locais, mas também aqueles que nos visitam através das companhias de turismo ou das companhias aéreas, possam de alguma forma minimizar a sua pegada para cá chegar, porque nunca cá chegarão de comboio, por exemplo, e portanto haverá sempre uma pegada, e aquilo que a região tem tentado fazer é também dar uma possibilidade das próprias empresas fazerem essa compensação. E isto é importante numa região ultraperiférica, obviamente, porque falamos aqui da contribuição líquida. A nossa é, obviamente, ínfima, mas todas as contribuições são importantes. E eu gostaria de reforçar isto. Numa época de trevas, alguém tem que levar a luz. E, portanto, se não forem os grandes, que sejam todos os pequenos em conjunto.
Muito obrigado.
Obrigado.
Thank you.
Ekosistemlerin korunması alanında ise Türkiye, Akdeniz ve Ege Denizi'nde deniz koruma alanlarını artırmış, deniz kirliliği birbirini tamamlayan politik alanları. Son olarak Türkiye açısından 2026 yılında, yani bu yıl ev sahipliği yapacağımız Birleşmiş Milletler İklim Değişikliği Konferansı COP31 ile bu yerel ve bölgesel çabalarımız küresel çabalarımızı küresel bir vizyonla taşlandırmayı hedefliyoruz. 2053 net sıfır emisyon hedefidir ve yeni iklim kanunumuzda attığımız adımlar sadece sınırlarımızı değil, tüm Akdeniz havzasına daha dirençli kılma kararlılığımızın bir göstergesidir. Sözlerime son verirken, Akdeniz'in eşsiz biyolojik çeşitliliğini korumak için bugün burada ortaya koyacağımız ortak iradenin somut ve kalıcı sonuçlara dönüşmesini temenni ediyorum. Başka teşekkürü unuttum. Şimdi sözlerimin sonunda Sayın Başkan Eduardo Teixeira başta olmak üzere bu toplantıda emeği geçen herkese çok teşekkür ediyorum. Özellikle dünkü gezileriniz, akşamki nefis yemeğiniz, harika sohbetler için de ayrıca teşekkür ediyoruz. Azor Adaları'nda milletvekilimiz epeyce konuşma yaptı. Bir dahaki toplantıyı da Azor Adaları'nda yaparsak biz de burada daha çok konuşma fırsatı buluruz diye düşünüyorum. Hepinizi saygıyla selamlıyorum. Çok teşekkür ederim.
Teşekkür ederim Sayın Başkan, değerli katılımcılar. İnsanlığın ortak doğal miraslarından biri olan Akdeniz bölgesinde yaban hayatın korunması ve karasal ile deniz ekosistemlerinde yaşanan bozulmaların ele alınması gibi hayati bir konuyu görüşmek üzere toplantı. Bu önemli toplantıya ev sahipliği yapan Portekiz Meclisi'ne teşekkür ediyorum. Ayrıca otonom bölgenin Meclis Başkanı Rabina Hanım'a da bu sıcak ev sahipliği için teşekkürlerimi bildirmek isterim. Tabii Komisyon Başkanımız Eduardo gerçekten iki gündür buradayız. Son derece etkileyici manzaralar gördük, yerler gördük. Ve bu toplantıyı huzur içinde yapıyoruz. Bugün baktığımız zaman dünyanın birçok yerinde çatışmaların, kavgaların olduğu bir dönemde böyle huzur içinde bu toplantıyı yapmanın çok önemli. Şunu demek istiyorum, diyalog olduğu zaman, huzur olduğu zaman bizlerin başaramayacağı hiçbir şey yoktur diye sözlerime başlamak istiyorum. Değerli katılımcılar, 3 tane kıymetli konuşmacıyı dinledik. Hepsi birbirinden değerli. Portekiz deneyimi, Portekiz'in yapmış olduğu çalışmalardan bahsettiler. Ben de 1600 kilometrelik Akdeniz'de bir sınırı olan bir ülkenin milletvekili olarak bir şeyin altını çizmem isterim. Akdeniz'de yaşanan çevresel sorunlar hiçbir ülkenin tek başına çözebileceği sorunlar değildir. Denizlerimizin, ortak ekosistemlerimizin bağlantılı ve geleceğimiz müşterektir. Bu nedenle çözüm de ancak uluslararası işbirliği, bilim temelli politikalar ve ortak sorumluluk anlayışıyla mümkün olmalı. Önceliklerimiz arasında korunan kara ve deniz alanlarının güçlendirilmesi, sürdürülebilir tarım ve balıkçılık uygulamalarının yaygınlaştırılması, yerel toplulukların ve gençlerin sürekli aktif katılımlarının sağlanması ve iklim değişikliğine uyum kapasitesinin artırılması yer almaktadır. Ayrıca bilgi ve deneyim paylaşımını artıran bölgesel mekanizmaların desteklenmesi, finansman ve teknik kapasiteye erişimin güçlendirilmesi büyük önem taşımaktadır. Doğayı korumanın kalkınmaya engel değil, tam aksine sürdürülebilir kalkınmanın temel şartı olduğunu bir kez daha vurgulamak isterim. Biraz evvel değerli meslektaşım Hulki Bey ifade etti. Ülkemizde gerçekten Cumhurbaşkanımızın eşi Emine Erdoğan hanımefendinin baş Türkiye 1995 yılında Varşova sürecinin tam üyeliği gerçekleştirdikten sonra Varşova sözleşmesiyle ilgili her türlü o anlaşmanın gereğini yerine getirmeye çalışıyor. Biz bunu çok önemsiyoruz. Eğer bizim yaptığımız bu çalışmalarla ilgili olarak bir disiplin yoksa o zaman bu çalışmaların hiçbir anlamı yok. Görüş alışverişinde bulunmamız lazım. Bu süreçleri takip etmemiz lazım. Burada Avrupa Birliği'nin, ülkelerin, herkesin katkısı var. Üniversitelerin. Dolayısıyla ben bunu çok önemsiyorum. Türkiye enerji konusunda olsun, diğer konularda olsun üzerine düşen görevi yerine getirmeye çalışıyor. Bakınız enerji konusunda şu anda yenilebilir enerjinin bizim enerjimizdeki payı %63'ler seviyesine çıktı. Hedefimiz 2050'lerde sıfır emisyonu kirlenmeyi getirirken, sıfır rakamına ulaşırken diğer taraftan da yenilebilir enerji şeyini %100 kapasitelerine ulaştırmak. Bütün bunlara baktığımız zaman tabii ki ortaya en önemli sorun olarak bu işin finansmanı çıkıyor. Desteklenmesi çıkıyor. Bu da ülkeler arasındaki diyalogların olmasıyla ilgili bir husus. Bakınız sözlerime son verirken gerçekten Enerji Komisyonu Başkanımıza çok teşekkür ediyorum. Her seferinde bizi Portekiz'in değişik bir bölgesinde ağırladılar. Çok önemliydi. Hem o ülkeye gittiğim zaman o bölgeyi tanımış oluyoruz. Hem de